From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 31st day of January 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com. We'll get an update on the agricultural news for the afternoon and hear from Eric Snodgrass, too, from Conduit Ag about the weather forecast here and in South America. You can stay with us for the whole of the hour. You'll hear all of our Commodity Week program with guest Naomi Bloom, Chip Nellinger, and Sherman Newland. If not, it's up online right now at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. We'll do all of that on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world since 1985, with more than 10,000 episodes and 30,000 interviews.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at 482. It was 8.25 lower on the settlement price. The May contract at $4.93 finished 8.5 lower, and the December at 4.60 1/4, down 4. March beans at 10.42, 2 lower, and the May contract at 10.57.5, down 2.25 for the day. Mike Zuzlow now joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Happy Friday to you, sir.
Happy Friday to you, too. I usually look forward to the weekends. However, this time around, there could be a lot happening. But before we get to the Trump tariff potential, why don't you tell me about what you saw for the bulk of this week in Chicago?
I think the two primary drivers, the demand side or perceived demand side, is the tariff threat, and just as importantly, the retaliatory scope of the countries that we put potentially tariffs in place upon. Canada and Mexico are extremely important agriculture sectors for us, as we all know, and so they combined are every bit as important as China in terms of the ag sector by itself, especially with the supply chain changing quite a bit in the last 5 years since right before in the onslaught of COVID. I think the other thing is the supply side and the weather, and this has a couple facets to it, Todd. The negotiating strength or weakness by Canada or by Mexico, for instance, in corn, or by China in soybeans, if tariffs would be put in place against them by us, is directly related to the ongoing weather concerns all over the world. And we have this week joining from the fray India and Southeast Asia as far as wheat and oilseed weather becoming very hot, very dry in some key areas at the very wrong time. And so it's a tug of war. It's a push-pull. What do the tariffs actually say? And then how does the weather look? I think that's how I'm going to walk into Sunday night's trade if those tariffs are put in place by the president on Saturday. And with the tariffs specifically, we've talked about it before. The best gauge we have right now is the currency market in terms of the weather. The dollar goes scooting higher and sharply higher as a safe haven. To your question, this week it was about gold. Gold became the safe haven. New record highs, I think at least twice this week, were made as we prepared for the tariffs and the tariff threat while the dollar kind of stayed subdued. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic, and I think a good canary in the coal mine as to whether the funds pull their plug on a lot of their long commodities that they've built up.
Am I correct that gold also had to do with the BRICS nations and their continued possible push towards creating or using something other than the dollar to base their trade off of?
It does. And this is where they are working very aggressively for more bilateral trade. They're probably not going to do any kind of an index or a currency weighted system like we have right now, but they are trying hard to do more bilateral trade. This feeds right back into the tariff protectionism threat as they see it. And so they're all interrelated right now. And there's a huge global push-pull going on right now in these financial markets and with commodities at the very tip of the spear.
So now let's put some of this into place as it related to today's trade. Was the drop in the corn market just a reaction to the news that the president did intend, at least last night and through the bulk of today, to put a tariff on Mexico and Canada if they did not meet some requirements he had set forth as it was related to fentanyl and immigration?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, we still have a situation in terms of dollar terms and in volume, bulk terms. Mexico is our number one buyer of both corn and wheat. And to the earlier point, the USDA ag attaché, you know, you'd asked me not long ago whether Mexico's been buying ahead in corn. I think so, in anticipation of this, but maybe not as much as I had established in my mind 30 days ago, because an ag attaché report came out just about a week ago today and said that the drought has impacted them so badly. The production was cut and the imports for corn for Mexico was increased from 24.5 million metric tons to 25 million metric tons. So that negotiating power is they're more at a disadvantage to go ahead and reciprocate and retaliate on a tariff against us when it comes to corn. Whereas with the wheat, they may be more susceptible to do that because they can get it from other countries. I'd say pork is the other big feature in this market. I don't think we've appreciated in the livestock market that January through November, Mexico's taken about 1 million metric tons of our pork. And that's about 40% of the total that we ship out to the world. And if they would, and they've talked about putting to potentially retaliatory tariffs on us when it comes to pork, that's a lot of pork that we would have to come back into this country and consume. So it really caused, I think, a supply issue. And prices for pork here in the States could actually drop pretty rapidly and affect the other meats potentially.
And then how do you view the idea from the president that this is, I won't call it round one, but this is a fentanyl immigration tariff, and then on April 1st, he's going to impose a second set or potentially increase or first time, whatever happens, as it relates to trade. And I'm wondering whether Canada and or Mexico have any reason to care about the first set.
I think they do because, you know, we have to realize that over 80% of all the goods shipped to the United States is what Mexico sends, and about 75% of all Canadian goods and services come to the United States. You know, in Mexico, there's estimates out there that we are equal to about one third of their GDP, and it's probably closer to one half because of the financial ties that we have. Doesn't mean it won't hurt us, but I think they're very, I think they're going to work very, very hard to meet this first deadline so that we don't have to get to a second deadline. And that's kind of my answer to your question is, President Trump is making it very clear to our trading partners, you think this is bad. If you don't do the easy, quote, easy stuff, wait till we get down the road to the spring and summer. And again, his tariff policy and his foreign policy truly are one and the same. And we keep seeing that over and over again.
A couple of other things we should probably take up. You and I are talking prior to the 2 o'clock release, Central Time that is, of the cattle inventory number. So we do not know what those said. However, I bet you have an idea of what you're expecting.
Yeah, and the key is, you know, our year-to-date slaughter right now for cattle, calendar year, is down 9% as of Friday's weekly red meat production sheet. The on-feed monthly number that we just received about a week ago is 99% of last year, or right around 11.8 million head. There's a big disconnect out there, Todd, as far as why aren't we killing more at record high prices when we know the weights are up. And so we aren't, you know, keeping marketings backed up. We're very current, I think. But how are we still behind 9% on year-to-date slaughter right now? And I think this is what the inventory report's going to need to show me, is which number is correct. Or do we have beef cows on January 1 of last year, 28.2 million head? How much lower is that? All cattle and calves, 87.2 million head a year ago. How much lower are we on that? So that I can then go back and look at which number is right. Do we really have roughly 12 million head on feed, and we still have close to last year's slaughter. Why are we down 9% right now year to date?
Thanks, Mike. That's Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, the ethanol industry is confident that just confirmed U.S. EPA Chief Lee Zeldin will be supportive of its top issues. Zeldin, a former New York representative, has been critical of ethanol in the past, but the industry is confident that will change now that the Senate confirmed EPA chief must answer to the president. Troy Bradenkamp is with the Renewable Fuels Association.
So what we heard at the confirmation hearing was a guy that said, you know, I may have not always been the most supportive person in the past, but I know who I work for, and that's Donald J. Trump, and he is a supporter of ethanol and E15, so I'm going to be that as well.
Zeldin told senators that year-round sales nationally will be up to Congress to decide. Speaking of ethanol, the Energy Information Administration, or EIA, says ethanol production dropped to its lowest level in almost 3 months, and inventories declined during the week ending January the 24th. Output declined to an average of 1.015 million barrels a day. That's down from the 1.099 million the previous week, and the lowest level since the week that ended September the 27th. The EIA says Midwest production plunged to an average of 964,000 barrels a day, down from 1.042 million the week before. That's also the lowest level since September. Ethanol inventories in total were down 25.72 million barrels. That's 25.8 million barrels lower than the previous week. And finally today, Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum said she does not believe the U.S. will impose tariffs tomorrow, February the 1st, as President Donald Trump has pledged. Reuters says her administration has already put a response plan in place if it becomes needed. The report says retaliatory tariffs would initially exempt the auto industry, sparing what has become Mexico's most important manufacturing sector and one closely integrated with the United States. The retaliatory tariffs would likely hit pork products, cheese, apples, grapes, potatoes, cranberries, and bourbon whiskey, as well as manufactured steel and aluminum. Of note, corn is not on the list. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's check in now with Eric Snodgrass. He is at Conduit Ag. Hi, Eric. Good Friday to you.
Yeah, same to you.
So let's start, I suppose, here in the Midwest. We've had some rainfall. It's warmer. Yeah. Can we expect more?
Yeah, this will be an interesting go of it. I mean, January was such a cold month. When we kind of wind it all back and look at the stats at the end of it for the country, I think we're going to end up with one of our coldest Januaries on record. It won't be what we had in 1982. I looked back. That was one of our really brutally cold winters. But we're going to be up there. And what's interesting about that is this rain at the end only happened when we started to get mild again. So my point here is that so much of January tapped into Arctic air. And to be honest with you, Todd, the rain at the end of the month's been great. Here it is. And that's soaking right into the topsoil, which is where we do need it, given the mild conditions. But I just still wonder if that fall drought is lurking underneath all of this in the depth of our moisture profile in the soil.
Well, what tells you about that or continues to tell you that kind of story in our weather conditions?
Yeah, I mean, I look, there's a lot of things to look at. The big one is I look at the rivers. Okay, so when I go see the Mississippi River at St. Louis and at Memphis not making major recoveries, I mean, at St. Louis, I think it's still 3 feet below low stage. That tells me the whole upper tributaries of the Missouri River and also the upper Mississippi are still low. Plus, there's some great maps out there that I look at from NASA that just kind of, I think, do a good job at kind of giving the macro scale view. And we've got issues. And it's, some of the ranks in terms of how dry this January is, parts of Iowa, Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, the Dakotas. I mean, that is most of our central and western Corn Belt. We've got several climate reporting districts in there that are showing a top five driest, with several right around the Wisconsin-Iowa-Minnesota border that just had their driest Januarys on record because they did not get the moisture that we just saw.
Did you see, by the way, the note about the Ogallala aquifer being more than a foot lower this year than it was last year?
You know, I'll just say this. I'm not surprised by that information, even though parts of the the southwestern and high plains had a ton of moisture in November. I talked to those growers. I saw some of them just this last week, and they said, look, that was great moisture. It's sitting in the top, you know, foot and a half. But that Ogallala is much deeper than that. And we look at how that whole, aquifer system has been changing with time. And you look back at the pressure put on it during the drought in 2024, the one that lasted 2.5 months out there. And I'm not surprised that it was it's shown up that much lower compared to a year ago.
Now bring this back to the transition from, January to February, which happens over the next few hours. What does February look like?
Well, February is going to look like a redistribution of high pressure. Now, what does that mean? We've had parked off the west coast of North America a huge Pacific high. I think it's going to move. I think it's going to move to the Bering Sea. And you say, well, what does that do? Well, that repositions all of the coldest air back into the Canadian prairie, back into the Northwest, and back into parts of the Northern Plains. And we're going to see more chances in the next 10 plus days of mild weather than we are going to see cold. Now, I don't think that lasts. I actually foresee a pretty big turn, probably the middle or end of the month of February, toward another pretty big sock of cold air and maybe some shifts around in the polar vortex. I know that's not a term anybody wants to talk about right now, but there's a chance that that thing could get disrupted pretty well. But here's the long and short of it. I think the pattern's going to go active. I think we have multiple chances at seeing precipitation in February, and I want every bit of it because I'm still concerned about the risk of redevelopment of drought as we get into summer. But of course, spring's in the middle there, Todd. And here's my latest thought on spring. If you're in the Ohio Valley and the mid and lower Mississippi River Valley, there's a lot of indications of wet. And I don't want to talk about tight planting windows followed by drought risk because that is a 1-2 punch that is still renting some space in my head, but none of us want to endure. So there are some lead indicators out there on that, Todd. And until I have some, overwhelming evidence to change that narrative, I got to stick with it.
Oh, sure. Just put the fear into us and then leave us hanging. Thank you.
That's what we're good for, right, Todd? My job is to ruin everybody's Friday afternoon, and then we just slide into the weekend, and I hope you all forget. So that's...
Yeah, that's true. So you're going to ruin it by telling us South America has rainfall in Argentina, too?
Well, in Buenos Aires, but that's not where the biggest drought area has been. It's been up along the Uruguay River and also along, that's hard to say, Uruguay River, and also along the Paraná River and north. But those aren't the big producing areas in Argentina. To be honest, if we wanted a major bump in our markets, we need to push the drought back over to Cordoba. But this week, I saw big storms roll through Cordoba. All right, going forward, southern Brazil starts to pick up some rains. The epicenter drought in Brazil has been Mato Grosso do Sul, while Mato Grosso, just to the north of it, has actually been so wet. I'm sure you saw their harvesting of beans, and then their planting of safrinha corn is off, about 10%+ behind where they were a year ago. And the new forecast keeps that area wet, which could continue to delay significant progress in those areas. So I think there is a bit more of a weather story coming out, but it's one of those weather stories where it's like, all right, time to really watch these key areas and see if they get any better or any worse. And then if it does, the premium gets built in the market, but it's not there right now.
Okay, thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Conduit Ag, joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, where right now, if you visit our website, you'll be able to register for the All Day Ag Outlook. That's coming up on Tuesday, March the 4th, just a bit more than a month away. The cost is just $40, but don't wait. Sign up today. And there is a special guest this year, actually two. Sue Martin will be with us. She's flying in from Iowa for us. And we'll also have Neil Dahlstrom. Now, Sue's name you'll recognize. Neil's you may if you are a fan of the book Tractor Wars. He'll be doing a book signing that day, so if you have a book, bring it with you to the All Day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, when on Tuesday, the 4th day of March. Also, in the month of March, WILL TV Channel 12 will be airing the Tractor Wars documentary that's based on that book by Neil Dahlstrom. It should be a fantastic day, a book signing for Tractor Wars. We'll have all of the folks that you're used to hearing on WILL. The Farm Doc team will be there. All that information is online at willag.org today. That's WILLAG.org. Don't wait. Register now. Commodity Week is next. You'll hear all of that program if you can stay with us here on our home station. Otherwise, many of these stations will carry it over the weekend. And again, it's up on the website too, or in your favorite podcast applications already.